Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You have a good morning?
I did.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So we were chatting before we got on this morning about our topic today, which is weight gain.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, right. And I feel like this is something where if you didn't struggle with it before breast cancer, I mean, I don't know anybody that hasn't struggled in the aftermath.
I know it.
So, and what's interesting is I'm seeing it amongst all survivors, not just those that are hormone positive, you know, because you kind of think, oh, if you're on the hormone suppression drugs, that's what's causing the weight gain. But I think it's just anybody who's getting thrown into...
Yeah. Stress can cause weight gain.
Stress or menopause, like, because I think you can still go into menopause through chemo and radiation, not just hormone therapy. So I was actually saying that there's a survivor in our program, and she stopped by my house, and she just looked like $1 million. Her skin was glowing. She had lost a bunch of weight. She just had so much energy. And I, of course, was...
What did you do?
What's the magic sauce? What?
Give it to me.
What did you do to look like this? And, you know, she's just like super blunt. She's like, oh, I'm on a GLP-1. And she's like, and I'm taking hormone therapy, replacement, you know, therapy. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'd be curious your thoughts on this, because for a long time when the GLP-1s first came out, I thought, oh, dear Lord, really? Instead of like getting to the root cause and just like figuring this out, we're just now taking another thing. And I was adamantly against it. But I have to tell you that I have seen so many positive things come out of this for so many women who have been struggling in the aftermath of just menopause in general, that I am reevaluating my position. What do you think about
it? Yeah, I am one that's least restrictive, you know, that like, what can I do to support my own body? I will say that from a balcony view, if you see it as a tool to support weight loss, it's important that you continue to have good nutrition and weightlifting.
Because it can cause muscle wasting.
Right. Well, muscle wasting is what will happen if you don't get enough protein.
Protein and lift weight.
Yeah. And so I will say, I have several friends in the cancer community that their providers put them on a microdose or a low dose of it because it reduces inflammation and quiets sugar cravings, which are both things that
contribute
to cancer. And so I'm curious about it. You know, like, it's kind of like, I don't know what the immunotherapy I was on is going to do long term, but it's like, if it's a tool that helps you get your body in a position.
Right. More regulated.
Yeah. I don't know.
I know. And the one thing I kept saying, though, is like, because when I mention it to friends, I have the same 10 to 12 pounds that I want to, it's like 10 to 12 pounds. And they're like, oh, you'll never get put on it because it's not, you know, 30,
yeah, you're not,
30
yep.
plus.
Yep.
But I'm like, dang it. Us 10 to 12 pounders want
we
that
matter too.
We matter too. And so I'm like, why can't I have a little GLP? So anyway, I haven't brought it up to my doctor. I haven't talked to anybody about it. But I have noticed that women, to your point, they look so much less inflamed. Yeah. They have more energy. You know, the hormone therapy thing is a whole different, you know, bucket.
Beast.
That's a whole different beast. But I think like when you start dealing with like perimenopause and you start seeing all these things kind of start creeping up and the inflammation and the weight gain and the brain fog, and you're like, well, I have to do something.
Right. Well, and I work in a gym part time, and I will say I can tell, you can tell certain people that are on GLP for weight loss that don't have maybe a solid understanding that you have to have a high protein intake because it does go after your muscles first.
You
and
look
so you
weird.
Get that Skeletor kind of look. But it can be a tool if you use it as a tool correctly. And so, yeah, I actually asked a provider about it, and it's because it's a weight loss drug. A lot of people don't qualify, like you said, if you're not in a certain obesity range and you have to prove that you've gone through weight loss programs and stuff. But I think the cancer community, it's a different tool in the toolbox.
Right. When you were saying that about the muscle wasting, you know who popped into my head?
Who?
Scott Disick. Do you remember him?
No.
He's Kourtney Kardashian's ex-husband.
Yes.
Did you see those pictures when he, I swear, he must have been taking a GLP-1 because that dude looked like he had been dead a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was scary.
Yeah. Well, because it you don't want to eat. And thinking about chewing meaty chicken, I would think would be nauseating. Ew. You know,
just
what I mean?
You saying meaty chicken sounds gross.
Yeah, that was gross. That was a gross example. But it does. It quiets the food noise. And so you have to kind of force
yourself to mm-hmm. eat.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't like that. Yeah. I don't want to feel forced to eat.
Yeah.
I just wanted to take away any kind of sugar craving.
Yep.
And then
that's
keep,
where I need
and
help.
Then keep me from, like, you know, yeah, getting the 30 grams of sugar from my chai latte. That's what I need some help on. Oh my gosh. So today we're going to be talking about the impact extra weight has on recurrence or disease progression. So first we'll talk about the link between weight and cancer.
Then we'll talk about the weight gain that comes from treatment and why it happens.
And we'll finish with weight management as part of survivorship. But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor. Are you feeling scared, overwhelmed, or lost post-treatment? Do you want to reclaim your life and thrive even better than before breast cancer? Faith Through Fire Survivorship Bootcamp is designed for breast cancer survivors who are committed to living their fullest lives. If you're ready to leap forward, seize personal growth, and redefine your journey, this bootcamp will provide the path. You might benefit from our bootcamp if the excitement of completing treatment has worn off, leaving you feeling unsure about your future. You feel confused by your new post-cancer identity and struggle to accept your, quote, new normal. You want to enjoy life again, but feel stuck in a cycle of negative emotions. Or you feel disconnected from yourself, others, or God. Our bootcamp offers a structured roadmap that delves deep into four key areas crucial for post-cancer recovery and thriving. Understanding trauma, cultivating a fighting spirit, managing anxiety and intrusive thoughts, and redefining and reshaping your identity so you can rediscover your joy and purpose in life. You can participate in person in St. Louis or online. To join our wait list, visit faiththroughfire.org/survivorship-bootcamp. All right. What do we know about weight and diagnosis? So over 50 to 60% of women diagnosed with breast cancer are overweight
or obese. That.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they say that being obese is a precursor to getting breast cancer because I think estrogen lives in that fat. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'll be honest with you, that seems surprising to me because most of the people in Faith Through Fire, I don't think are what I would consider obese.
Yeah.
Now, granted, we have half the women in our program are like 40 and below. The other half are kind of the standard age, you know, 60 plus. But it just feels to me like so many of the women in our programming are active and, you know, so it's
kind of comes out of left field.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like you're not thinking like somebody who's just morbidly obese is the only one getting this disease anymore. And now we're seeing it in younger and younger people. So there are rising trends in obesity and how they parallel with the rising breast cancer rates. But it's now considered obesity is the most common co-diagnosis in oncology. And it also increases the risk of recurrence by 30% and mortality by 50%. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's estrogen from the fat tissue. There's insulin resistance, which don't you think everybody in society at this point is insulin resistant?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, these kind of stats, like how many grams of sugar are you supposed to have in a day?
Oh,
isn't it 25?
Yeah, it's less than. Yeah.
It's like 25 and just my Starbucks venti chai latte, I think, had like 30 or 40.
Well, and the type of sugar.
Right. Also. Well, the added sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we did a prior episode about added versus like, you know,
what? Naturally occurring versus processed, all of it, how our body receives it.
And then to your point, inflammatory environments fuel tumor growth.
I think that's going to be the next big thing we really uncover is how much is environmentally driven by our foods, by the chemicals that are used to clean everything.
Well, and Sarah and I've talked about it in the past. It's like you can literally see inflammation on people's faces. Mm. Like I can look at somebody and be like, I can look at myself and say, ooh, you're looking inflamed.
Yes.
You know, it's like I go through peaks and valleys with
too.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you can actually tell. Abdominal obesity is a stronger predictor of poor outcomes than BMI alone. So research has been showing that losing just 5 to 10% of body weight can lead to significant reductions in markers like insulin, estrogen, and inflammatory cytokines, which I think is interesting. So obviously then all of us, in addition to just vainly wanting to be thin, like we know, I mean,
that's my primary.
Yeah, I think it is for most of us. You know,
well, listen, I went flat after, you know, it's you want to try and keep the weight off because you look like, you know, I feel like I've looked like Pooh Bear for a while, you know, and you have weight around your waist.
Yeah, we hear that from women. They feel weird when they're flat on top and then there's like
there's
a belly.
There's no balancing it out.
Well, I feel that way just because like I've always been an hourglass. Mm-hmm. You know, my boobs were huge before I got a reduction or before I got my double mastectomy.
That was a true reduction.
Yeah, that was a real reduction. I went all the way with that reduction. But I had huge boobs before, and so I'm very hippie. So it was like I had a true hourglass, and now, like, you know, I could only go so big on the implants. I only had so much skin.
Yeah.
So my boobs are so small compared to what they were, and I feel the same way. I feel out of proportion.
Yeah.
So I told Gary, I'm like, well, I went from an hourglass to a pear shape without my consent. You know?
Without my consent.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. You don't feel like you look balanced.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel that all the time.
Yes. Now, I will say that I think that we were our harshest critic.
Absolutely.
I don't know how many other people, and that's kind of what I was saying before. It's like when my friends gain weight or people in the program are like, I've gained 30 pounds, I never see it the way they see it.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when they lose the weight, I'm like, you're like a different person.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know you before.
Well, I remember when I was in active treatment, there was a point at which I had gained so much weight, they had to recalibrate.
Oh, the scale?
And I felt the dosing.
Oh, the dosing.
And I felt so much shame as I was sitting at Siteman waiting for them to figure out the new numbers. And I was like fighting back tears because it felt like there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah, that's super traumatic. I mean, here's a note to all the providers out there. If you have to readjust the dosing, don't tell us.
Correct. Just say we're really busy today.
It's going to be a minute. It's going to be a minute. We don't know. There's an issue. The pharmacy's behind. Don't say, hey, we have to like up your dosage big time. Oh my gosh. Well, so can you guess what the average weight gain is during breast cancer treatment?
Well, no. What is it?
It's less than you would think. Because most women I talk to will say I've gained like 30 pounds.
That's the number I hear all the time.
5 to 11.
What?
I know. Lies. You're not believing it. 5 to 11 is what they said average is. I was on the opposite end of the spectrum. I got so rail thin during treatment, like rail thin. I had appetite. I think it was just a stress response.
Yeah.
You know, natural fasting. I just didn't feel like eating. Like food had always been joyful for me. And I was like, I don't feel joyful. I'm not eating my food. So I got super thin. But most people gain on average, they say between 5 and 11 pounds. And I think the people we know would say not true. And so they said it can be chemotherapy related fatigue, hormonal changes, reduced physical activity. Did you work out less when you were in treatment?
Well, I was very restricted so I became a 5-mile walker.
Okay.
Yeah. I had drains for like 4 months with all the surgery. So it was very, I couldn't pick up a weight from October to February. He wouldn't let me drive my car because it's a stick. So I was a walker for that time.
How was that mentally to like not be able to be in the gym?
Hard.
Yeah. For people like yourself who like to lift and like to be in the gym environment, I've heard from them that like that mentally was really, really tough.
Yeah. Because
not only do you have this weight gain, but now you can't do anything about it.
Go for a walk. Well, that's not going to get this off.
I mean, a 5-mile walk's great, but I don't know that it does much for weight loss. There's this new app on Facebook or whatever, and they're constantly trying to say, all you need to do is plug in how much you want to weigh and we'll tell you how far to walk. And I'm thinking, okay. It's going to be like, Beth, you need to walk 40 miles a day, you know, to lose 10 pounds.
Head to Illinois.
Right. Exactly. This is kind of interesting. They say younger women tend to gain more weight during treatment.
Why do you think that is?
Wouldn't you think it would be the opposite? If you have women that are already in menopause, wouldn't you think it'd be harder for them?
Yeah. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah. I don't really know, you know, why that might be, but I thought that was kind of interesting. So weight control is now like a formal part of breast cancer care guidelines. I don't know.
What are they offering? Because
nothing.
I was...
GLP-1s.
Right. No.
Like they won't give them to cancer patients?
My buddy had to go to the Mayo Clinic. And he gets microdosing now. But I told you, I've asked my provider just to learn more. And it was rejected because it's not a weight loss category. Like you have to prove that you've done so much work with a weight loss program, that you've tried other interventions. So it's just interesting. But I said, if you're using it as a tool to reduce inflammation and quiet sugar cravings, it's a different way. It's just like ADHD, they're using old blood pressure medications. Like it's a different way to use.
Ooh, do tell more. Do I need to get on some blood pressure medication? Some metoprolol on the on the docket.
But I mean, it's a different, if it's a different approach and they're just not there. Insurance isn't there yet. So I think you have to pay out of pocket if, but I think it's an interesting question for cancer care.
So to your point, okay, so I'm reading this now. Okay, so for GLP-1s, there's Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, Zepbound. But they're only approved.
Right,
they're only approved for type 2 diabetics or overweight people who have a BMI of greater than 30, which
or
is
people in Hollywood.
Right. Or if you're Ariana Grande.
Yes.
Ariana Grande, who already weighed 120, is now, you know, 80 pounds because of Wegovy.
Yeah.
That's not true. Don't sue me, Wegovy. I don't know. But they have to have, so they're or their BMI has to be over 27 plus. They have to have one weight-related health condition such as hypertension, high cholesterol, sleep apnea, cardiovascular disease, insulin resistance, or prediabetes, or fatty liver disease. So you have to have one of those in order to like get on this.
See, cancer is not listed.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
That, well, because they've already drawn a parallel between people who are carrying extra weight and cancer, and yet they haven't made that leap. Interesting. I want to talk about kind of what we can do in survivorship,
yep,
but
yep.
Before we do that, you want to do Boobs in the News?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it. Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News!
All right, you ready for this?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so the title of this is Student Rescued from Mountain Twice in 4 Days After Going Back to Find His Phone.
I heard about this.
You heard about this?
I think so. Go, keep going.
Oh, that's funny.
They returned to get his phone, right?
So the man was a 27-year-old Chinese student. He developed altitude sickness twice after climbing during the peak's off season. So this is Mount Fuji. Okay. This is not like your, you know,
right,
your basic walk in Sedona. It says a Chinese student who was airlifted from Japan's Mount Fuji last week had to be saved a second time just 4 days later. So the 27-year-old climber made an emergency call on April 22nd after getting altitude sickness on the mountains. I can't even say what trail that is. About 3,000 meters above sea level. It says, okay, this is in the peak's off season, which officials urge people to be aware of incredibly harsh conditions. But 4 days later, police said they received another call to the mountain after the student who had not been named returned to look for his phone and other belongings left behind. They said another climber found him there unable to move after he developed altitude sickness for a second time.
Oh, my word.
There is no penalty. That's what I was going to ask.
Right, resources.
Like, what do you get? Do you get in trouble? This guy should be banned from Mount Fuji. Like, you're not allowed to come here. Or it speaks to phone addiction.
Yeah.
How bad do you want your phone to go risk your life twice? Says there's no penalty when a climber needs to be rescued, but the Chinese student's case prompted outrage on social media and calls for him to be charged, at least for his second rescue.
I mean, I don't know if I'm outraged, but it...
I mean, isn't the embarrassment enough?
Yeah, leave the guy alone.
I feel like the embarrassment of being busted twice. I mean, the first time, sure. You know, who hasn't needed to be rescued from a mountain
right.
in the off season?
Yeah, absolutely.
The second time, I feel like it's a little... That's on him.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's one of those things where it's like when your kid makes a mistake and you know they're so embarrassed that it's just that
yeah,
is the punishment.
Yeah, you just let it be.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know, but he's definitely the boo. But
yeah.
Have you ever like dropped your phone or lost your phone and like had to go, you know, like
no.
to great measures to get it?
No. Have you?
No, but I've had a couple close calls where I've been using public restrooms with my phone tucked into my
girl
top or my back pocket of my jeans and I forget it's there and it's like, you know, I'm like juggling to catch it before it drops in the toilet or it drops on the floor. Have you ever had your phone drop on a nasty, disgusting public bathroom floor?
I kind of get grossed out at how many people use their phones in the bathroom and then walk out with it in their
yes. You know what's even worse than that? Now we've really derailed. What's worse than going in with your phone and dropping it on a nasty public floor is the amount of people that walk into a public restroom with food.
Ew.
Gross.
I set my water bottles outside.
I won't bring them in. I'll tell my husband, I'll be like, stand out here and hold my water while I go in there. He'll just take his in. He's
nope.
one of those gross people.
Ew.
Yes. You know how many poo particles
He's
are just
the boob.
Yeah. Just floating around in there. I mean, it's like a cyclone of poo particles, and you're gonna put your water in there.
It's a danger zone, people.
We have derailed. But that guy is a boob. There you go.
Bibs in the News. Bibs in the News. Bibs in the News.
I feel like you're a bit of an expert Jamie when it comes to wellness and fitness and just like what to do in the aftermath of survivorship. What do you think are some keys to weight management since we can't all get the GLP-1?
We've established that.
Yeah.
I think one is managing expectations. So having grace and a healthy, you just went through something crazy, traumatic, your body, like have grace with yourself. You start slow, right? Mm-hmm. So like I remember, you know, throwing big amounts of weights in the gym and coming back and was afraid to pick up 5 pound weights because I, you know, I didn't know my range of motion. The first time I was able to do a push up, I started crying, you know, like it is a slow process, but I think a commitment to be consistent and just celebrate the small wins and get some guidance, you know, like it's good to have someone that can give you safe and manageable exercises to start. You might start with bands before weights and progress.
Do you think too, like I see this with a lot of gym rats in particular, like you don't think that you're working out hard if you're not sore, but I don't know.
Not true.
I was going to say, that's not really true. And as we're going into menopause, we need to be really careful.
Yep. I have a lot of women in my, I do Olympic weightlifting for coaching. And I love getting middle-aged women in there. And I'm like, the goal is not to wreck ourselves. We're past that. That was in our 20s, you know, like when it was fun to throw down. And and I said, but just good sweat, good heart rate, good zone training, good hydration and muscle repair. And that's what we need. We don't need to wreck our bodies.
Have you heard? I heard this for the first time the other day. I was talking to a middle-aged woman and she was talking about how she stopped doing overhead. She's been told not to do overhead presses because it can really jack up your shoulders when you're in menopause. And she had to have surgery because of it. And she was like a lifter. And so she doesn't do overhead presses. I've not heard that.
Well, that's interesting. We just came out of a 12-week cycle of pressing movements. And I had to modify a couple weeks in for most of my middle-aged people because it starts creating havoc up there. And there's whole certifications now to train women going through menopause. Like they're learning that you got to take a different approach.
Thank God. I really think that that's what's going to be different is when people start investing the time to know middle-aged women's bodies.
Yep.
And then, like you said, making those modifications. Because I remember when I worked out with a trainer, she had me doing so many overhead presses. And she would, you know, she would really watch and make sure I could maintain form. And of course, it was always better to do less and do it right, I think, right?
Yeah,
and kind of the general gist.
Yeah.
So I would get really down if I could only do, you know, 10
for
my arm. Just my poor little arm just started shaking like a leaf. And then I was like, I can't do it. But I always thought that was so interesting. I was like, I just think the menopausal body is just not well studied and people don't know.
No, you're right. It's an area that people are getting whole certifications in. I also think the balance of weightlifting and sauna, stretching, yoga. I mean, there's lots of different ways to be kind to our bodies, support our lymphatic system. But yes, we do need to lift weights as we age and our bones get more frail.
Yeah. And I think that's really hard for a lot of women because I don't love weightlifting. I find it, I don't know
why. We should work out together.
We should. Although, you know, so I haven't worked out with you intentionally. I haven't worked out with my friend Jess intentionally. I don't work out with Sarah intentionally because you guys all lift heavy and I don't like feeling like I don't like feeling yucky when I work out.
Shame.
I know. I'm like, I'll do it if it's easy. I don't want to do it if it's going to hurt, you know?
Yeah.
But going back to your point about like making it manageable, I recently just have this rule like, okay, if you go to the gym, like go 2 days a week because you know you'll go if it's just two, right? If I try to say five, I won't go.
Get out of here.
Yeah. If I say two and I phrase it as self-care and a de-stressor for myself. And then I make the rule like you don't go in with a plan, but you do lift while you're there. And I know that that's completely contrary to how most people weightlift because they go in and they're like, today's my leg day. Yeah. And today's my arm day. And today's the day where I just try to lift something, you know, I just go in.
Today is the day I am here.
I'm here. And I lift something. That is the goal.
I love it.
And I feel like that's, you know. And then obviously, you know, okay, so that's like the exercise piece. But can we also say that exercise, I mean, I think they've basically proven it. If you want to lose weight, it's about the diet.
Mm-hmm.
The exercise is there for your mental health, to keep your mobility up, to keep your muscles toned, you know, as you age. It's not really a weight loss.
Food has always been my nemesis.
Food is where the weight loss is. And it's just simple calories in, calories out. But you got to have nutrient-dense food. And I think in this age of just being so busy,
yep,
it it becomes really hard.
And honestly, most of us don't get, it's counterintuitive, but we're not getting enough protein to lose weight.
Right.
Which is very counterintuitive.
So, okay, quick pop quiz. I'm excited about this. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
This morning I had, well, I coached at 5 o'clock this morning. Mm-hmm. I had 3 hard-boiled eggs mm-hmm. and green tea before I worked out. Mm-hmm. And then I had a protein shake after. So okay. Not a very exciting.
No, but high in protein.
High in protein.
So I had a grass-fed hamburger patty.
Yeah, you did.
In the air fryer. And then I had Ooh. 2 scrambled eggs and 2 pieces of bacon. And then just a little bit of Greek yogurt.
So you probably...
I probably hit my 40, 50 grams of protein.
I was
going
to say, you probably 40 grams. Yeah. I'm trying to get to 30.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. Yeah. So it's easiest for me to do it at breakfast.
That's awesome.
And then it's harder for me at lunch and dinner.
As the day goes on. I mm-hmm. totally agree.
Yeah. So it's like, if I can just start my day off like that, yeah. I won't be hungry until 2.
Yeah.
If, you know, so, but it's like, you have to know, when are you most likely to get those grams in?
Yeah. You and know. I'll put collagen in my coffee, mm-hmm. which is, you know, another 15 grams.
Are you a big, you know, now there's kind of this kick about you shouldn't be getting most of your protein from liquids, which I think there's probably some truth to that. I just wonder.
No, I mean, I always say God's design, like if you can get it from
food,
absolutely. But to your point, our lifestyle is not conducive to that always. Mm-hmm. Like, we food prep on Sundays. By Wednesday, we're out of meats.
Right.
I also, like,
need more meats.
I jetted over here after a meeting, yeah. so I needed to take a protein yeah. in the car. So, yeah. I mean,
get
I used
it
to just
get it.
Grab whole chicken breasts and just gnaw on them in the car. But I'm like, you know, I'm too old for this.
Oh my gosh.
Back when I was training.
I was going to say, I was seeing you driving down the highway with like a chicken breast out of your
chicken.
Mouth. Well, that's the other thing. I will eat beef all day long. Oh, I don't love chicken breasts.
I mean, agreed.
You agree?
But yeah. Chicken breasts, like sometimes I feel
so
nauseous
bland.
Chewing it.
Yes.
But we're not supposed to have a ton of red meat.
I know. That's what they say. You know why I say that I'm not going to buy that? Even though cardiovascular disease is the biggest killer of women, is that Gary's grandpa just passed this year. He was 98 years old, and that man did nothing but eat some red meat.
I'm telling you, man.
And I just am not buying it. I think it's all the processed foods that's killing us. I don't think the red meat is... I'm not on the bandwagon. You know, the cardiologist would say otherwise, but...
Well, there's even stuff with blood types and the types of meat that you're supposed to have, and I'm A negative, and red meat... I have a harder time digesting. Yeah, there's lots of interesting work in that world. But man, if you can afford the high end, good quality, you know.
Well, that is the thing. So to your point about running out of meats, when I go and get my grass fed, you know, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you eat that much protein throughout a day, you will go through it so fast, to the point where I had to really check myself because the kids are like, can I have a hamburger?
Right.
I'm like, no, those are mommy's.
They like fillets.
Yeah,
they want salmon.
They want to eat all that too. And I'm like, we can't afford for both of us to eat this way, guys. Mom's had
cancer.
Young.
You'll be fine.
You go have the the sugar stick. Mom's going to have her grass-fed beef. I mean, seriously, it was so bad. I was like, you can have peanut butter and jelly. Mom's going to have this. And it's like, that's not cool.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a cost. It's like a... But it's easier to cut 500 calories from diet than it is to burn 500 calories through exercise, which could be like an hour of running, you know? And ain't nobody got time for that.
No. Nope.
So you got to have high fiber, high protein, healthy fats to reduce those sugar cravings. And that's really what helps you the most is if you can get away from that sugar for an extended period of time.
Foods,
you will stop craving it, and then it becomes easier. I actually heard something on, it was some sort of reel. Some doctor was saying they did research, and they took a bunch of morbidly obese people, and they said, okay, on day A, you can eat whatever you want. But then on day B, you can't eat at all. You fast all day long.
Okay.
And they did that for like a year. So one day they could eat whatever, no restriction. Second day, they didn't eat anything at all. At the end of the year, they had all lost a considerable amount of weight, and they had all just naturally changed their diets to reflect healthier foods. And it was like all about getting rid of that sugar and just like not having that craving set them up for success the next time they ate. And over time, they started making healthier choices, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I do the same
addictive
thing.
And it's an everything process. It's hidden.
It's so addictive. Yeah. Like, I know I have that addiction, and I actually even see it in my 10-year-old, which really scares me because I'm like, a 10-year-old shouldn't have a sugar addiction.
Right.
You know,
right.
Before we get to kind of final words for people listening, let's go to our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
Okay, we're back. So what do we want people to kind of know?
I would say that you didn't get here overnight. It's a journey. Mm. So take it a day at a time. Get to that gym. You know, if your job is to get there 2 days a week, get there 2 days a week and build from there.
Yeah. We also had a podcast episode, if you haven't listened to it already, with Dr. Michelle Seeger. She's the author of No Sweat, which kind of helps you shift your mindset around health. And she tries to help people reframe diet and exercise not as chores or punishments, but as powerful forms of self-care that support your energy, mood, and joy. So if you can start thinking about these things, the dietary and the exercise, as more of self-care practices that can help you maybe look forward to it as a stretch, you know, but maybe not dread it. And then just start small, right? You can add one extra serving of vegetables to your meals, but just adding nutrient-dense foods are going to reduce those cravings and keep you full longer. You know, and set a 10-minute daily movement goal. You know, like Jamie said, just, you know, foam rolling. I don't have my own foam roller, but when I go to the gym and I do it, I just feel so much better.
Yeah.
I sleep better that night. I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated.
No, it doesn't.
Right?
Yep.
And still, it feels self-care. So momentum starts with small, enjoyable steps, people. That's what we're trying to say here. But yeah, that's about it. Until next time, see ya. Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.